Welcome to the Conscious Classroom podcast, where we're exploring tools and perspectives that support educators and anyone who works with teens to create more conscious, supportive, and enriching learning environments. I'm your host, Amy Edelstein, and I'll be sharing transformative insights and easy-to-implement classroom supports that are all drawn from mindful awareness and systems thinking. The themes we'll discuss are designed to improve your own joy and fulfillment in your work and increase your impact on the world we share. Let's get on with this next episode. Welcome to the Conscious Classroom. We're going to speak about sharpening focus. This is a subject that makes sense when we're talking about preparing for testing. And during the era that we're living in, the coronavirus era, I don't know if they're starting to call the students from this generation, Generation C, because of the great impact that the coronavirus is having on all of our lives, and especially on learning for students, their whole learning experience. The classroom experience, the peer experience is completely changing. And many parents and teachers and educators like myself were encouraging students to not spend time online, to spend time in real engaged interactions with their peers, with their teachers, with their mentors, with their parents, with their families, with each other. And now they're only able to do that for the most part online. Their learning is online, not through a direct relationship. Their preparations are online. Their educational markers of testing or study have all completely changed. And students who need, young people need structure. They need freedom, but they also need structure. They thrive when boundaries are clear and well described and well defined. They know where they're going. And then within that, they have freedom to explore and create and innovate and choose. But those boundaries, those handrails, those guardrails are things that they need. They need to be able to feel like they're in a world that's safe and they're in a world that is guiding them towards growth and accomplishment. So we're in very upended times, and we're only going to see as the decades go on how our students fare, what kind of effect this is going to have. And it's my intention, as well as my hope, to provide students with a depth of familiarity with all kinds of self-care, contemplative, integrative tools that they'll be able to use in their own life from this year and moving forward. If there was ever a time for integrative supports, body-mind connection, well-being, this is the time. This is the time to share these ways of thinking, these perspectives, and these tools, these habits with students, and build them into their lives, and let this inner contemplation and this inner support provide structure for them in the way that their outer support has really been upended. I'm sure many students are happy that the standardized tests and the SATs are postponed because they create a tremendous amount of stress. But no testing can also leave them unsure of where they stand, how they're going to know how well they're doing, what colleges to apply to, if they can apply to colleges, how they're going to be accepted, how they're going to be judged, what they need to study for. I received an email very much critical of testing and standardized testing, and surprised that I was doing a webinar about sharpening focus in relationship to testing. Now, I'm not a huge fan of large-scale standardized tests, but they are part of our education world at this point in time. And whether students take these tests or do more independent study, they're still going to need to develop the skills to be able to relax and think clearly and drop into their own authentic understanding and knowledge and curiosity as best as they can. So I believe that these tools and ways of thinking are equally important, whether they're going to be taking tests or whether they're not going to be taking tests this year or in the future. We want to enable our students to develop that sense of their own, trusting their own understanding and trusting their own way of relating to knowledge so that they gain stability from what they've learned, what they're interested in, what they've internalized, and then the questions that they may have about a subject matter. Too often, the way that we expect students to engage with information is by rote, by memorization, rather than by learning, digesting, and then internalizing the information that they're learning so that it enriches them as beings, as young people, and especially with teenagers, as young adults. This way of being able to access one's own information, one's own understanding, is what's going to enable students to exceed their own expectations on testing. And it's also what's going to enable them to feel that sense of accomplishment and pride to have responded with the fullness of themselves. When we're looking at focus and focus on demand, what you see in students is you usually see they're on some kind of continuum, with the negative extremes being low energy, resignation and dullness, and hyperactivity, high strung, over tense, performance anxiety. And I want to unpack those two extremes a little bit before we talk about what mindful awareness really allows you to do and what I've seen happen, the miracle stories I've seen happen with students. And the more they practiced and the more they really reach into themselves to use the mindfulness exercises and the contextual thinking exercises that they've discovered and practiced really under times of stress. And when you see the results, it's really moving and exciting and really life-changing for students. But let's look at the two extremes first. So you have students who, when they're faced with needing to perform or pull out information on demand in a testing environment, in a project presentation, even in needing to just stand up in front of a class and deliver, there are those students who will decide that they have failed before they start. And what you'll see in them is you'll see in their body language itself, you'll see a resignation. You'll see them kind of curl back in themselves. You'll see them fall back into a state of, one could think it was relaxation at first, because they seem, their muscles seem so soft, they seem so at ease or not tense, not nervous. But really what they've fallen into is not a sense of relaxation, because this is a moment that demands focus and alertness. What they'll have fallen back into is this state of low energy, futility. So the positives that they may gain from this low energy of not over clamping down on themselves so that they're not so wound up that they can't think, but they'll have the opposite. They'll have such resignation, such low energy, such fatigue set in that their minds go dull. The energy pumping to their brains slows down. That they're really in a state of hypoarousal where they're fallen into a sense of futility. You see it on their face. You'll see the muscles of their face lose that slack, that tightness. So they lose their tone and there's a slackness in the muscles. You'll see it in a pallid complexion color. You'll see them their eyes will be dull. And that state of resignation, whether it's subtle or more pronounced, is not going to help them do their best. It's a state that is, it makes them dull to their own capacity, to their own potential, to their own love of subject matter. And when you see your students who are used to responding that way, preparing themselves for the worst by opting out before it happens, you'll want to work with them over time before those high pressure situations to get them to discover this point of relaxation that is rooted in self-confidence and inner strength. So that inner strength, that inner backbone, that sense of self, that sense of solid ground, those muscles of the inner self, that confidence that they have in themselves, that is very important for them. So that's the one extreme. The other extreme that we see in students is that we see them get into this hyped state. And many overachievers, very competitive students, students with a lot of family pressure, often first generation college students, can get very, very high strung around testing or those environments where they need to focus. And when they get high strung in that way, what happens in terms of the physical body language is you see the opposite. You see their muscles get very, very tight. Their complexion can be red. Their breath can be fast. They can have a slight sweat, a sheen on their face, and their eyes can be overbright. And when you see that in the student, what's going on internally is that they're so pumped up, they're so panicked about what they're going to respond, that they'll really be pulling from what's at the surface of their minds, what they've been able to memorize, what's there in their short-term recall. You won't be pulling on the same depth of authenticity, originality, and complexity of thinking. Those students who get very hyped up and high strung, they often try to rope their friends into getting equally high strung. I'm sure you've seen it in a classroom, there becomes this shared experience where everyone gets riled up over tests and they all think that they're going to do their best because they're pumping themselves up in a way that gets them overly high strung. This again is not, it's not the, this beautiful place between both opposites that we can help students access through teaching them different mindfulness practices. The beautiful place where we want students to go to is we want them to be able to have the sense of wherewithal and confidence and the knowledge of exercises and practices that will bring them into this state where they're very alert, they're very focused, they're not distracted by their own mind with any messages that are coming their way. And they're also not falling into a state of apathy or lethargy. That state of relaxed focus gives them, it's like the experience of flow state, but it's not as serendipitous. They can practice their way into this state of relaxed focus. And what they discover in this place of relaxed focus is they discover a quality of self where they feel surprisingly a lack of self-consciousness. They feel like they are invincible because they're just standing in what they know. They're not daunted by what they don't know. They're not frightened by a curveball that might come their way. They're standing in what they know, and they're willing to work with that and express themselves, take risks with their understanding and their ingenuity and their unique ideas while staying on topic. That free expression and free thinking comes from a groundedness. It's not a free thinking that goes off topic and that is distracted and random. It's a free thinking that enables them to pull out connections and expressions and ways of articulating that are highly original and unique to their own understanding. What happens when students access this is when they come out of a situation where they've had to present or they've been under pressure to respond to an oral exam or a written test, they know they've done their best. They know that what they've articulated has been truly their own knowledge. And that gives them a confidence and a surety that if they don't do as well as they need to in order to meet certain benchmarks, they can build on what they've learned and move forward because what they've established is solid ground. When they're in that hyper state of too tight focus, too wound up, they're not on solid ground. And if they discover that they need to learn more and do more, they feel like they don't have any more room to grow because they've been so kind of deeply clenched that there's just no more room to grow. What you need is you need like a relaxation so you can open up and allow more in, more knowledge, more learning, more information, more complexity. When students who are very hyper don't do well, they often feel incredibly defeated because they feel like there's just not one more cell in their brains that can open up because they've closed off access. And for the students who go dull and lethargic, they feel like they can't do better because they have no juice, they have no energy, they have nothing in them that's reaching forward. This relaxed state of authenticity that comes from mindfulness practice and contemplative thinking and self-care, self-love, gives students that solid ground, which has a lot of nutrients and a lot of self-support where they can grow from. And it's really quite extraordinary. There's one student who I had who was in a very challenging international baccalaureate program, and I had him both his junior year and his senior year. He was Latino and was aspiring to go to college. He would be the first of his family to go to college. And he had a lot of support at home, but he was striving to a professional degree where he was really on his own. And he had a tremendous amount of insecurity. He was quiet and shy. you know, well liked by his peers, but in a classroom of 32 people, he would rarely raise his hand. But he did all the work, and with the mindfulness exercises, he practiced really diligently. He's also a good athlete and often used the tools to help him with sports events. So it's the end of the year, and for English International Baccalaureate, English, I guess it must have been English 4, they have to do oral exams with and present and respond to questions from 3 different teachers. And this was on Shakespeare. He told me after his exams, he was so nervous. He said he stood outside the door where he was waiting for the previous student to leave, and it was his turn. And he said he was shaking and sweating so much, he felt like he was going to be sick and he wouldn't be able to go into the room. He said his knees were weak, and he literally could feel the shaking all through his body. So what he did first is he did some mindful breathing. He felt his feet on the floor. He followed his breath going in and his breath going out. He allowed the tension in himself to settle down. He allowed all the flutteriness to just calm down as he just watched the rhythm of his breath going in and the rhythm of his breath going out. He gained some composure, but he was still dead nervous. He had a few more minutes, and before he went in, he started practicing some love and kindness. He was sending himself good wishes. And that act of sending himself good wishes reminded him of all the times that he had done that practice in class and at home. And he kept telling himself, you've got this. You know, you've got this. And he said something happened when he was sending himself the good wishes, that he felt like all of a sudden he kind of came into his body, that he let go of the voice in his head that was telling him that he's not good enough, that he'll never make it, that he doesn't have any, he shouldn't be there in the first place, that it was really a mistake all these years that he's been doing this program and that he doesn't belong. He's not smart like the other kids. That voice in his head just kind of switched, and he was just himself. And he said when he was doing the love and kindness, he just felt like he was there and he was waiting and he was going to go in. And he was going to be himself. So he walked in and he answered all the questions. And he felt passionate, excited. Sometimes he didn't know, sometimes he did know. He was able to think on the spot and creatively develop his answers and responses. And when he left, he didn't really know how he had done, but he felt really happy. He felt really like himself. The teacher told me independently when I saw her the following week, without me telling her that he had told me his experience, she said that in her 25 years of teaching and testing, she had never seen a student respond with such confidence, authenticity, and creativity. She said his level of engagement was several years beyond his maturity. He was a senior in high school. She said it was like a junior in college response in terms of complexity and authenticity and integration and analysis of the complex characters and character development that, of course, is part of Shakespearean work. And she had tears in her eyes. She said, I've never seen anything like it. And then I told her what he told me about how he had done his mindfulness practices and that he dropped into himself. And she said, that's exactly it. He was more himself than I've ever seen him. He was exactly himself, but much more so. I was able to see him after his first year of college and after his second year of college, and he was continuing to develop his mindfulness practice. He was also working with other types of different motivational books that inspired him. And he was in business school and he was doing really well. He wasn't acing everything, but he was handling the challenges of going to college, still living at home, making the shift. And he said it was hard, but he was really having the time of his life because he felt like he was opening up from the inside out. He felt like he was opening himself to a way of learning that was giving him so much joy and confidence and satisfaction. He really attributed that shift to the mindfulness, to the short practices that we did in class, to using breath to calm, to using awareness and self-knowledge to realize that he was out of his depth, that he was getting himself tied up in knots, that he was not going to live from the best of his ability, that he was in a situation where he was going to be listening to those undermining voices in his head that said that he didn't belong there and wasn't good enough. So his self-knowledge through the various social emotional practices, through the various contemplative practices, through contextual thinking, he was able to see, of course I feel this way. I've always felt this way. This is a high pressure situation, but I can do something about it. It's not the end of the story for me. What mindfulness practice gives teenagers is a sense that they can do something about the feelings they have. During this time of coronavirus, having a sense of choice and optimism and positivity and the sense that we can do something about the challenges, that we have tools in our own hands to help us calm so we don't have to be pulled in different directions based on the news we hear or the environment around us, that we can really support ourselves. We can give ourselves the self-care and the self-love that's needed to allow ourselves to live life at its fullest, whether it's in, you know, an incredibly upended time like now, or whether it's, you know, when things are going very smoothly and everything's flowing in our lives. Mindful awareness is there regardless of the external situations. So when it comes to sharpening focus, the approach that I have for the students is to use the quality of their attention, to use their mindfulness practice, to let them drop into themselves and from that sense of stability and groundedness and interest, then they engage with whatever they need to engage with. So that's how, with Inner Strength, that's how we work with the students. Well, this student I told you about, he was one very moving example, and I feel a lot of pride and affection for him. But I've seen it in many different ways. And that when you see students drop into themselves and it's almost like their whole voice and their being sits back, and at the same time as they sit back, they stand up tall and they have that sense of, I'm here, I'm focused, I'm ready to do what's in front of me. I have something to say, I have something to give, and I'm going to give it all. I'm not going to hold back out of fear. I'm not going to second guess myself. I'm not going to try to think about what I learned in the test-taking seminar. I'm going to pull from the best of myself and from my own strength, and that's what I'm going to give. I've lived, maybe it's 15 years, 16 years, 17 years, not that long for many of us, but you know, I'm going to bring the sum total of all of what I've learned and how I've learned. That's what's going to give me that sharpness of focus. That's what's going to give me the flexibility of thinking. That's what's going to give me the creativity to engage. It's very easy to underestimate the power of contemplative tools. It's very easy to assume they're only there for stress, or they're only there for sleep, or they're only there for compassion. But what we see is that they really are the foundational tools for self-development, foundational tools for beingness, for self-care, for ultimately the realization of our higher human potentials. Because if a student can drop into themselves and access that kind of curiosity of thinking, and that kind of freedom of expression, that lack of second guessing, that lack of that undermining voice, not try to get it right, but try to give what they know. That's where incredibly innovative thinking is going to come from. That's where they are going to be able to put their attention to whatever they're doing, whether it's in a human, in a social services context or a technology context, or an engineering context, or a relational context, and bring the best of themselves. When we see a generation of students who are able to bring the best of themselves in this kind of authentic way, we are arming and empowering our society to make huge leaps and changes for the better, because we'll be accessing that inner drive. And that inner drive is really also a drive towards goodness. You'll see students lose a negative competitive streak where they want to put others down. You'll see students be able to extend a helping hand to others, because they're not going to lose by doing that. They have resources to give. They have space in their awareness to care. They're not just focused on themselves. That's the qualities that we want to bring in to our culture as we move forward. Let's do a short practice to give you a sense of how to work with your students. And we'll run through a couple of different practices in one session, just to show you how flexible you can be with the mindfulness guides and how you can work with your students. And we'll do a 5-minute practice to finish. So let yourself, the best way to learn is to do the practice yourself. So just follow along. Let yourself come into a comfortable seated position. Allow yourself to rise up tall in your seat while you feel the rootedness and solidity beneath you. And I'll sound a bell, which you can use to focus your attention. And let your attention practice that sharpened focus. So really put your attention on the bell and the sound of the bell, noticing all the nuance you can. The texture, the tone, the waves, and letting your attention be free of distraction. And as the sound of the bell fades, allow your attention to be very soft and easy, but also very alert. And imagine that you were listening for a sound far away, almost like you were listening to sounds at the edges of the horizon. So you're not strained, you're just as still and quiet and relaxed as you can be, with your attention focused on as if you could hear sounds that are far, far away. As you bring your attention back, notice your body and how it feels as you practice listening. And now bring awareness into your whole body, noticing any sensations from head to foot, allowing your attention to sweep from the top of your body down to your toes, keeping that relaxed and alert focus without strain, just simply noticing what's there as you let your attention sweep through your body without distraction. And when you come to your toes, start again. We'll do this 3 times. If you notice tingling or tightness or pressure, just keep your attention moving. We're just scanning to see what's there. It's like when you put a piece of paper in a scanner and you watch the light go through. It doesn't stop anywhere in particular on the page. It just scans through the whole evenly, just noticing what's there without judgment. And now this 3rd time that we'll scan through our body. This time, take a deep inhalation and exhale. And as you scan through your body, imagine that you were this time sending breath, sending freshly oxygenated air through your body from your head all the way down to your feet, evenly and slowly. Imagining that you were oxygenating your whole body, freshly oxygenated air from the top of your body all the way down to your feet. And now notice the difference of scanning your body and seeing what's there and using your breath to oxygenate your body from head to foot. See if you felt any more energy, vitality, wellness, relaxation. When you hear the bell, we can finish. This way of using the breath to relax the body is something that you can teach your students to do, helping them really feel a sense of agency and a sense of stability and a sense that they can focus their minds without needing anything else. Starting with sound can be easier, especially if a student is anxious. So letting them pay attention to sounds they can't really hear that are far away can build a sense of relaxation and focus, even tranquility. And then having them notice what's happening in the body, head to foot, without trying to resolve tension or fear or flutteriness, but just noticing. And then using the breath to wash through the body, doing it several times, oxygenating the body all the way down. Breathing in, oxygenating the body all the way down. So they're aware of what's happening in the body. They're aware of how they're feeling. And then they're able to attend to themselves. They're able to nourish themselves using the breath. Of course, we're always breathing and our blood is always pumping oxygen to our cells. But when we do this simple visualization, we have the sense of agency and we have the sense of self-support. We have the sense that we can calm our bodies. We can nourish our bodies without trying to make anything go away. We're not trying to force the stomach to stop fluttering. We're not trying to force the heart to beat more slowly. We're not trying to force the palms to stop sweating. Or if a student is very passive, we're not trying to force the body awake. You know, sometimes kids will pinch themselves hard or push their nails into their hands to feel something when they get into that passive state. So we're not trying to force the body. We're just simply loving the body through this oxygenation, this process of oxygenating the brain, sending the breath all through the body. And you'll find that it can give students that sense that they have something in their hands. They can do something about how they feel, and it's easy. They don't have to be anywhere. They can be standing outside of a testing classroom waiting to go in. They could be at home taking a test online. Teach your students, your children, how to work these tools. It doesn't take much. You can really introduce it. Without pressure, introduce it as a fun activity, introduce it under low pressure situations, introduce it just as a habit forming activity to do before you go online for a class, after you finish being online, before you move to your next event. Give them a way to work with the body, to scan the body using sound and using breath. Fantastic. So thank you very much. Always great to speak about how to better support our students and our entire culture with mindful awareness, self-knowledge, this relaxed and caring, easeful approach to learning. And learning is not just in school. We're learning all the time. We're learning about ourselves and we're learning about our interaction with the world around us. All these tools apply to all of us, and we can certainly use them ourselves. So I encourage you as well to experiment with this one. If you watch the news and you feel riled up, practice this focused attention on the self, on the body, and on this type of self-care using breath, and see what difference it makes. We all need to strengthen our immune systems. We can strengthen our immune systems by lowering stress, by lowering reactivity, and by self-knowledge, by understanding what we're responding to and how we're responding to it. Thank you very much, and be well, stay well, stay healthy, wash your hands, have a dance party at home, and we will get through to the other side. And when we get through to the other side, let's all have developed much better habits of self-love, self-care, and support for our younger people.
Thank you for listening to The Conscious Classroom. I'm your host, Amy Edelstein. Please check out the show notes on innerstrengthfoundation.net for links and more information. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please share it with a friend and pass the love on. See you next time.